we were raising our series C from DST was happening. We were, you know, going through the term sheet and I was working on that. And suddenly, you know, the Facebook activity picked up. They came to us with a very, very strong offer, not only in terms of price. I think price was one part of it. It was more about how did they envision the two companies coming together. I think that was the main part, right? How our visions aligned and how WhatsApp would thrive within the Facebook family.
Hello, and welcome everyone to the Insights podcast series from Axel. I'm your host, Anand Daniel. On this show, we offer up straight talk on business, entrepreneurship, and self-improvement through stories and conversations with some of the most brilliant startup founders, business thinkers, and industry leaders from around the world. If you want to learn more about the series, you can head to insightspodcast.in. My guest today is someone I've known for more than a decade. Neeraj Arora is someone who's known for his pivotal role at WhatsApp as an early employee and his chief business officer. We chatted about his career moves from India Times to Google and then onto WhatsApp. At that time, his move to WhatsApp was a very non-obvious move, but he talks us through what made him do that. We also talked about his time at WhatsApp and some of his key learnings working with Ian and Brian at WhatsApp. And finally, we talked about the multi-billion dollar Facebook WhatsApp deal as well. And finally, we also covered some of his experiences from investing in India over the last few years and some advice from him to the startup founders here. Let's dive right in. Neeraj, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for taking time early in the morning, California time. Really appreciate it. And I love your new COVID look, I guess, with the beard. Welcome.
Thank you for having me here, Alan.
Pleasure. Maybe I'll start out with an interesting question or observation. Your LinkedIn says lead QA engineer in your profile top. What does that mean?
I like testing stuff. So lately I've been tinkering with a few things, some new projects. And I put together a small set of people who are building stuff, and we're just prototyping and testing new stuff. And I'm the one who is always the lead tester on everything. So that's why I call myself the lead tester, lead testing QA person.
Is that something you enjoy doing, and you did that during WhatsApp and all through, or is something new you're picking up?
No, I think all of us used to do that because we were a very small team. Even Jan and Brian used to do that. In fact, I think Jan's bio on LinkedIn might say something similar. So I think we always were very passionate about making sure our product works well, and all the engineers and everybody, business folks and support team, obviously, and everybody were making sure that, you know, the little things were always working well. So yeah, we like doing that.
Good to hear that. I pain my founders I work with testing the app, so I'm not alone in this. So good. Yeah. Cool. So we'll start with your background. So maybe your early education. Tell us a quick background about your early life, where you grew up, schooling, anything you want to share.
Yeah, I think pretty standard. Nothing extraordinary. Lower middle class family. My dad used to work for the Indian government and my mom was a teacher. Pretty basic, nice schooling. And till class 12, I was in Delhi. Actually, beyond that as well. But my basic schooling happened in Delhi. And there was a lot of fun, early simple days, and till it became serious that you have to prepare for one of the competitive exams, engineering. And that's when I think I finally realized that you have to work really hard to get in one of these really good institutes. And that was cool. Went to IIT Delhi.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Delhi, western part of Delhi, near Punjabi Park. And all my schooling was there. And then I spent the next 4 years in Hoskas, where IIT Delhi is. And that was a pretty amazing experience as well.
Got it. Great. I think when you went to school, there were a lot of other founders, soon to be founders from your batch. Who were
my class, not a whole lot. I think maybe a lot of them actually moved here for masters and they started something. I think the first crop started around Bini and Sachin starting Flipkart. I think 2006, I think something like that. You would remember better than me. I think a few years after me was when the real startup entrepreneurial energy started in the 90s. And there were a bunch before that as well. There's obviously the legendary ones like, you know, the first class of the world, but that's also IIT Delhi. But I think more in a more systemic way where people looked at starting something very seriously, and it was not something that was discouraged or not encouraged. Like, it started happening in, I would say, mid-2000s. I graduated in year 2000. I think a few years after me is when it all started coming together and people wanted to do something right after school and college, right? So there's a bunch after that. Like, there's the Dipinder of Zomato. There's, like,
A huge lot of them. So it was slightly after after your time. Got it. So you graduated and went on to Accelion, right? One of the first engineers there, and then went on to do an MBA and started working in India Times, their investment side, investment and corporate strategy. So how did walk us through that phase of your career?
Right. So actually, the fun fact there was that after IIT, my first job was supposed to be Infosys. And Infosys was a pretty hot company back then. But it was also very large. And I think that's what actually was my worry of going to Infosys. I just like small setups and places where it feels like you are actually having an impact and you can see what you're building. And that's pushed me to look for something which was not a typical go join a established big company in India. And luckily, one of our seniors from IIT Delhi had started a company in Singapore, and he came looking for engineers to our campus. And it was completely him and what he was doing. And I had no clue what startups are. There were not a whole lot of startups back then. And this was 2000 actually. Yeah, this was actually at the peak of .com in the US. So we would hear stories of, you know, Google and stuff like that back then, but we never really experienced something of that kind in India at scale. So long story short, I said Infosys is cool, but it's too big for me. So I spent exactly 29 days in Bangalore at Infosys. And then I went to Singapore to join this little thing called Accelion. It was called something else back then. They renamed to Accelion. And that was a really fun experience. They were building Dropbox back in the days when there was no Dropbox. And it was more enterprise focused, where if you have to do some sort of a file delivery remotely to some part of the world, you have clients, they were enabling that. They were building a smart cloud. And that was a really fun experience. Also a tough one, because the moment I joined a few months later, everything came crashing. And luckily this company survived. So we were able to survive that whole thing and got to a decent size and scale. And I spent 5 years in that company. And then I was missing the India scene a little bit. And this was the time when India tech scene was starting to, you know, happen. There was, you know, all the big US tech companies were setting up shop in India and they were getting more active. There was a little bit of a startup scene going on. And so in 2005, I moved to India to do my business school. And that was more of not my want to go to a business school. I don't think business schools are, for me personally, was something which I had planned. It was just like going back to India and figuring out what I wanted to do next. So it was sort of like a break time for me to understand the ecosystem as well as pick up some business education while I was doing all that, right? So I spent most of my time figuring out what I will do next, and classes were happening in the background while I was there in Hyderabad. So yeah, I think I joined ISB. And I joined India Times right after that. India Times was sort of like a big daddy of internet and e-commerce at the time, where they did everything from content to ads, commerce, email, everything, right? They were travel. They were one shop that did everything. They were the original super app or super website.
Super news, everything.
They did everything. And what that also meant was that a lot of things were broken. So we were hired into a team that was tasked to revamp a bunch of things at India Times. So we relaunched email and did a bunch of other things for India Times. And I spent 18 months. Last, I would say 9 to 12 months was in the investment team, because they had a very active investment program where they would invest in emerging technologies, which India Times was not building themselves. So I got some experience on how do you evaluate companies and, you know, invest and look at your investments and all that, right? So that was pretty cool till I found Google US was looking for corporate development folks for the Indian region. And there was they had one person, Samir Sood, who was head of the whole Asia region, and he ended up hiring me as the second person for the region. So that was like when I started getting exposed to a lot of stuff that happens in the Bay Area and globally through Google. I joined them in 2007 in India. And that's when early stage ecosystem in India was getting active. Erasmic, you know, came around at the same time, which became Excel, as you know.
And you had early backers of us. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that was a really special experience because our main job at Google was to acquire companies for Google in India. And after looking at everything that was happening in the ecosystem, very quickly we realized that there's not enough happening for us to acquire, right? There were some companies, but not a lot. And a lot of those companies were not product companies, right? So that was the whole thesis that we will go and find managers, early stage especially, and back them and become LPs in early stage funds. And out of that, Erasmic came out, Seed Fund came out, and Venture East Tenet came out. So we ended up doing 3 seed funds. Personally, for me, that was a great experience, again, looking at how early stage investing happens in India. And we were lucky to be associated with Erasmic at the time. And some of the really, really good companies came out of that era of the seed funds that were formed, right? So I pretty much fell in love with like how you take an idea and a team, early team, and help them and give them a little bit of capital to start and see them grow, right? And then in 2009, I moved to Mountain View in the Google Corp Dev team here. And that again was more of an economic decision part of Google, where they said like all the remote teams, because we're not acquiring that much outside of the US, move to the base. Even though I had no plans to move to the US or work in the US ever in my life, but I wanted to see how things happen in Bay Area. It was very exciting. It's like the mecca of tech. And we had heard stories of how Google and Yahoo and all these really cool tech companies got started and how the ecosystem is so vibrant and there's so much energy. And so I think for me, that was the driver of coming here and experiencing, like at least getting to see. So I thought, okay, I'll just go spend a few months or a year and come back. And here I am 11 years later sitting in the Bay Area.
We want you back here, man, sometime.
Yeah, I think this place sucks you in. There's no place like the Bay Area in the world. And now I think the last few years, my passion and work has been more targeted towards how do we make sure India has, you know, the ecosystem and the setup to build companies just like Bay Area has, right? So that was the reverse circle back to India to make sure that we have like everything that you need to enable, you know, really awesome founders to start awesome companies and help them scale the companies globally.
Got it. You've covered a lot of ground there. I want to rewind a little bit. So the move from your times to Google, I get, and then moving to the Bay Area, that's also straightforward. But the move to WhatsApp, was it an obvious move at that time? There was Facebook, Messenger, like a lot of other options, right? Walk us through that transition. And you were pretty early in WhatsApp, right? So maybe help us through. That was a pivotal career move there and you timed it well.
Yeah, I think I'd been at Google for 4 years and last 2.5 years here in the Bay Area and Mountain View. It was a phenomenal experience. It was, you know, life-changing for me to be able to see so many companies and startups and getting to know the founders and learn from them and some amazing product leaders at Google and see all the innovation come out of Google and outside, right? And be able to acquire a bunch of these companies into Google was like an amazing experience. I learned a lot. And more than
2009 to 11.
Yeah, 9 to 11. And more than, I think, just learning the acquisition process, I think I was able to see and witness how founders think about building companies, right? That was like eye-opening for me, like how the ecosystem is so supportive of founders and the mentorship network that they have, the availability of capital that they have, how it encourages risk-taking and how people think so much outside of the box. There are no rules. As long as, you know, you're willing to experiment and take a risk and break, you know, whatever the rules are, people are very encouraging and support you. And so I think that was like an amazing, amazing experience for me. And I spent 4 years at Google and I was itching to go back to something which was smaller. And Google was a pretty big company and my team was small and, you know, we were doing really impactful work for Google. But my itch was to go to something which was really small and was building a product and I could touch and feel it myself and see my users using it myself, right? So when you are at Google at that level, at such a big company scale, it's impossible to see what comes out of your work, right? So that was the itch. And I had no plans as such to, okay, I'm going to go do X. It was more about, mm-hmm. I was always very curious. So I was meeting a lot of companies anyway through my job. Mm-hmm. And some of these companies would really pick my interest, right? There was these companies like Dropbox and Airbnb and Square, which are like these behemoths here right now. Like they are like billions of dollars worth and thousands of employees now, right? Those were little companies back then. And they were breaking out. They were the new heart, attracting the best talent from the Valley kind of companies. And some of these companies would pick my interest and I would go spend time and understand what made these companies special. So I was like looking around and like passively and until these two founders at WhatsApp, which was very early, it was like 5% company, nobody had heard about them. Myself included had not heard what they were doing or what WhatsApp was. We were trying to acquire them into Google because Andy Rubin, back then who ran Android and who was the founder of Android, wanted to build a like a default native messaging app into Android. And so that was the idea, to bring some team, a small team to enable that, something like iMessage for Android, right? So that was the idea. I met a few teams. WhatsApp was one of them. It was difficult to find them. They were hidden somewhere in Mountain View, but thankfully they replied to my cold email. And I spent some time and we gave them a bunch of mm-hmm. offers. They declined everything. They just wanted to build their own thing. They had spent like 10 years each at Yahoo and they saw like how big companies, you know, it's difficult to innovate and move fast, right? So they just wanted to control their own destiny. So they said, okay, we like you, but we don't want to sell the company at this point, right? It was too early for them.
They had raised capital by then or?
They had not raised any capital by then. So it was really early. And I just fell in love with everything they were doing. The two founders and how they thought, and how even back then in 2010, they wanted to build a global company, right? And the more time I spent with them, I got convinced about, you know, how they thought about the world a few years down the line, right? Even though there were a lot of messaging companies out there already, but their approach was pretty different, right? That kind of like made me, you know, ask them for like, can I come help you at WhatsApp? And I was a business guy, but then I'd, you know, transitioned from being an engineer to more of a person who would focus on the business side of technology, right? So the first question they asked me was, what will you do here, right? Everybody in this company is coding, including themselves, both of them. So what are you going to do? So I was like, yeah, that's a good question. Let me go back and think about it. So I went back to them a few months later. I stayed in touch with them. My pitch to them was very simple. I said, as founders, you end up doing a bunch of things every day that you don't like or don't enjoy doing because they're not engineering and product-driven tasks, right? I mean, you know that you've funded so many companies. Like there's so many things the founders do every day, which is not core to the product, right? So my pitch to them was very simple. Like, I'll take all of those things off your hands and I'll do it for you, right? And they liked that idea, actually, to the point that Jan started writing down everything that he didn't like. So long story short, it took me a year to convince them to hire me.
Wow. Okay.
So I finally joined in 2011 and they raised Series A in the middle. And I joined as the first business guy and the team, I was employee number 20, I think. Something around that. I think employee number 20.
But when you wanted to join, they had 5 people.
If I had joined a year earlier, they had 5 people, right? Yeah. But yeah, that's fine. I think it was the right time for me to come in because the company was, you know, growing, started to grow. It had a lot of investor interest. It had a lot of partnership interest. There was a lot of other things which were happening, which was just not product. And I think the day I joined, Jan actually sent me a list of things which he had made and said, okay, this is your... There was no like profile, job profiler as such. It was... And that's what I really liked about the whole thing. It was very much like... It felt like my own thing. It felt like I'm joining to, you know, create certain new things which are not happening in the company, like partnerships, and think through a lot of other operational stuff in the company. And yeah, so the next 7 years was spent, you know, helping the founders build and scale and do a lot of other things in the middle.
That's great. So that was a phenomenal run. Maybe we'll cover some of the firsts when you are with WhatsApp, right? A few of the firsts, talk to us about your first meeting with Jan and Brian, if you remember it.
I think Jan and Brian's first meeting was when I was at Google and we were like trying to understand, right, what they did.
Yeah.
I remember one thing very clearly. Jan was very quiet in the meeting and Brian was talking a little bit. So I think it was very obvious that they didn't want to share too much about what they were doing with Google. And it was like an awkward meeting of some sort where I was asking them a lot of questions and they were not really forthcoming. There were a lot of learnings there, right? How do you deal with comp dev of a big company, right? It was a classic case study of that. And that's what I really like about Jan and Brian. They're, even though they are engineers, they really know how to deal with a lot of other things which are not product related, right? So the whole process, the way they ran the process and dealt with Google was pretty phenomenal, actually.
Got it.
Yeah, so the first few meetings were like very awkward and they did not open up to me because I was from Google. And so they were being very careful. Yeah.
Good. Few more first rapid fire. First tricky, tough decision that you had to make at WhatsApp.
First tricky decision. I think it was sort of a Jan, Brian, me decision, but it was the most tricky thing I think we did early on. This is the time when WhatsApp was starting to grow in a bunch of countries. It must be 2012 or 13, something. 12, I think, late 12 or something. And Samsung was the big daddy of Android back then. It still is, but it was like the big daddy. Like it was like the biggest, the most important Samsung Android maker. And they came to us and they said, look, we want to preload WhatsApp in a bunch of phones. Why don't you give us your app and we will just put it on our phone so that, you know, in a lot of countries, it's a much better experience to just start using the app, going through the app store, downloading it. And back then, all these issues were, you know, pretty big, right? So obviously, it was like a no-brainer for me. Like I was like, okay, when Samsung comes to you and wants to preload your app onto their phones and they have massive distribution, that's like a lottery ticket, right? That's like the best distribution you can get. Or not the best, I would say, like the easiest distribution you can get. But we ended up saying no to them. And that was like not easy, obviously. Which also meant that there were obviously multiple risks to saying no then. One was that you give up on the free distribution that you will get from Samsung. That was one, obviously. Two was, as a little company, you were trying to burn your bridges with Samsung, which, you know, is not easy, right? And all of those things happened, right? We said no to them. They didn't like it. They ended up developing their own messenger. I forgot the name. It was pretty bad, actually. And they kept on pushing it for years and years. It didn't go anywhere. But going back to the tricky part of this whole thing was, the decision was made because WhatsApp was very organic, right? So in the sense, we never spent any money, marketing dollars to acquire users, right? So everything, all the users that came to WhatsApp was word of mouth pretty much, right? And this was in the same vein where you said, if you create artificial distribution where somebody looks at the phone, buys a new phone and sees a WhatsApp logo on it and they don't know what it is, and they go through the process of installing it or registering it for it, but they don't have any friends to talk to, or they have like two friends to talk to. It's a very bad experience, right? So I think the main decision, we had to forego distribution for out-of-box experience for the users. And that was a very difficult, you know, decision, but I think the right decision in the long term. So I think it goes back to how do you build a company and a product for the long term, right? It's very easy to fall for easy, quick growth, you know, spurts, and you say, okay, yeah, I'm getting this free distribution, might as well take it. But what you don't think about is you get a bunch of these users that install your app, you start using it, but did not stick with you because they had a bad experience, right? So we said, we don't want all this artificial distribution. We will come back to it when our graph is big enough that somebody installs the app and they had a much better experience. So we actually delayed all these pre-installs for at least a couple of years. And then I think 2013-14, we started doing it and it was a much better program for us. So yeah, long story, but yeah, that was probably the most tricky,
tough decision. Yeah,
tough one that we had.
Maybe the last or the first, your first meeting with Zuck of Facebook.
First meeting with Zuck was at his house, I think. That's what I remember as my first meeting, where after, I think, about 2 years of like back and forth, and we had been delaying talking to Facebook about a deal, and we basically said, no, we don't want to sell the company. And eventually, I think we got to some sort of a handshake in 2014 between Jan and Zuck. When Jan called me, said, I think we have a deal. Why don't you come over and we'll talk about the next steps. So that's when I think I met Zuck for the first time at his place. And it was sort of like a happy environment because we just handshook that we're going to merge the company with Facebook. And we just talked briefly about what is going to be the next, how are we going to announce it? How are we going to do the next steps to execute on the deal?
Got it. Great. Maybe when you talk about this deal, it's one of the biggest and a very small company in terms of number of people. And talk us through the deal or anything closest to your heart from that aspect of your career.
I think the moment I joined WhatsApp, it was very clear to me that Jan and Brian wanted to build an independent company for a very, very long time, or at least forever, right? Because there were no questions. We never entertained any inbound about M&A. Like, we would flatly not even discuss it or talk about it or entertain it, right? So we had a bunch of really good inbound from WeChat, Tencent back then, Ponyma, like from all quarters, at some point from Google as well. And we would just dismiss it and move on. Like, we just said, we have too much to do and we are just focusing on building the company and we'll not discuss it, right? So it just happened, and we were raising our Series, I think, C at the time. Series C from DST was happening. We were, you know, going through the term sheet and I was working on that. And suddenly, the Facebook activity picked up. They came to us with a very, very strong offer, not only in terms of price. I think price was one part of it. It was more about how did they envision the two companies coming together. I think that was the main part, right? How are visions aligned and how WhatsApp would thrive within the Facebook family, right? And would be given mm-hmm. the independence to build what we wanted to build, and we'll continue to do it post independently. I think that was the main reason why we thought it's worth discussing this deal now, because it gave us what we wanted. It gave us the ability to independently execute on the product and grow it and monetize it. And, that was the main driver for us. So we kind of came to this fork where we said, okay, we have to decide. This was now big enough offer. It was an interesting enough offer, the way it was, being discussed, where we kept our independence, where we had the support of Facebook. And the price was enough for us to think about whether if we have to go public in a couple of years. We looked at how companies in our domain, Twitter and a bunch of other companies, would go public and would list at some certain price, certain, valuation, market cap. And I think looking at all those parameters and looking at how the deal was being proposed to us looked like a really, really good win-win for everybody, for Facebook, for us, for the users of WhatsApp. And that's when I think it was a master in deal making from the Facebook side as well, in the sense that they knew what we really cared about and they were able to do it for us and for our users, right? There was no plans of integrations of combining the products or anything. And that was important for us. We wanted that ability to quickly execute on the product and the business side of things that we were envisioning at WhatsApp. So I think definitely a very creative and bold, I would say, deal making. And that was, you saw the result of that, because when we sold the company in 2014, we had 450 million monthly active users, so close to half a billion. And I think we doubled or tripled in a few years from then. So it kind of shows that our speed of execution actually went up. And this was not because we got any distribution or anything. It was, we were completely separate and we just executed on our plans. It was just that we were able to hire aggressively. We were able to get a lot of other technical help from Facebook on the storage, on the server side of things. They brought a lot of those, things that we were trying to build ourselves and they already had in the ecosystems of Facebook family, right? So combining the two actually really turbocharged the growth of WhatsApp. So I think I would say execution was flawless in the deal.
Awesome. So when you joined or when you started tracking in 2000, when was that? 11? Time frame? WhatsApp had how many users?
I think when I first met them, they were sub 10 million users, I think. I would say. I don't remember exactly.
It was 10, 20, years. Whatever million to a billion plus users. Yeah. That's a phenomenal journey. Congrats. So maybe last question on this.
Yeah.
Looking back, any key traits of Jan and Brian that you think really stood out for you, for the founders who are listening from the journey?
Yeah, I think I touched upon that a little bit. There was a lot of them, actually. It was like a masterclass for me to see them operate. I learned so much from just being in the same room with them on key decisions, looking at them, how they hired people, how they made big decisions for the company, right? It was absolutely, I couldn't have asked for a better, class to learn how do you build a long-term company and a product that people love. And I'll touch upon a few things. I think the first is such a simple and obvious thing, but a lot of founders, forget about it or don't pay enough attention to it, is how much you obsess about the user, right? And this applies more to your consumer startups, but I think some flavor of it also applies to enterprise and SaaS, because you have a user, right? In the end of the day, you're building a product for somebody, right? Whether it is for a company or for your end user, right? And I saw that firsthand when I joined. There were like a lot of emails coming in from users that they had issues with them, because Android was pretty unstable and a lot of flavors of Android back then, and it was really unwieldy operating system. And I think a lot of these product related stuff, that my product is not working or some issue with it, or it doesn't deliver messages on time or something, like there were some issues every day that people will email us about. And Jan and Brian went through each one of those emails themselves, each one of them. They would read all of those emails, and I'm not talking about tens and hundreds. I'm talking about a few hundred emails or thousands of emails every day. Right, so there was a barrage of these things that came in from all over the world in different languages. Sometimes they were not in English. So they made sure that all of those early feedback that we were getting, whether they were bugs or other feedback or feature requests, anything, whether they didn't like the color of the app or how ugly it looked or whatever, it was like it could be anything from a user. Somebody read it, and the founders, they were the ones who were early on, the first few years of the company. They were, you know, making sure that they read everything and they replied, they bug fixed everything that they saw that made, you know, sense. So that obsession with the user was, I had not seen that before anywhere. And this is very basic, right? You're building a product for somebody, so you want to make sure they're happy about it, right? So, but to what level do you go to make them happy, right? To what level do you go to make the experience of the app flawless, right? And how you don't care about, you know, adding new features, and you care about making your current users happy, right? So it was like, the focus was always about how do I keep my existing users happy, and not about how do I get new users faster. So there's a trade-off, right? Obviously, we don't want to, it's not that we never wanted to grow. So growth is important as well, but at what cost? If you're growing so fast, and all you're thinking about as a founder every day is how do I grow more, and how do I make sure I grow faster and more, you kind of lose track of what is happening to the existing users or your older users. Are they still sticking with you? Are they still happy with your product? Are they still satisfied with the experience they're getting with the product, right? It's a good balance. And I saw them do that really, really well, where they would obsess about the existing users, and then they would also do things to make sure the new users are getting in. And the growth was very measured and very controlled in a way. But because there was such a strong, what it did was, for the long term, it created such a strong word of mouth and such a strong user, you know, experience that we never had to think about new users. It just kept coming in, and we just kept on improving the experience for the users, and they would bring us new users, and it kept growing like that. So that was, I think, for me, the trait that was so different and so strong. It kind of like completely changed how I thought about building a product and a company. And there were a lot of other things. How do you think about the long term, right? You always have decisions in front of you which look good for the short term, might be bad for the long, medium to long term. They always optimize for the long term. They always thought that we're going to be around for a long time. Let's not do quick wins. Let's not make decisions that help us right now, but doesn't help us long term.
Maybe ads or anything. Any give us an example of that?
I think distribution, I talked about spending money to get new users. Distribution, the Samsung deal I talked about. Raising capital. How much you want to raise and how quickly you want to raise. How do you want to talk to the press about the company? There was like tens of these examples of, you know, it was all about the user and the product. Everything else came in later. Like, we'll think about telling the story of WhatsApp to the press. It's not important. I mean, we're getting the users every day. Why do we care? And then a very strong emphasis on not hiring too quickly and not hiring too many people, and not creating a culture of, you know, titles and levels and all that, right? And this would only apply, I'm obviously adding a caveat here, this only applies to certain kind of setups, right? In certain cases, you want to hire fast and you want to create levels and you want to scale and all that, and that's required. In our case, I think...
You guys had 50-odd employees when you exited to Facebook for $19 billion. $19 billion. That ratio was like unheard of till that time. And I'm guessing even still... then. So congrats. That's an outstanding story there. So maybe switching gears, let's talk about what are you doing these days? You went from investment, you invested in Erasmic or early fund, and I'm sure other startups and everything. You went in on the other side, been an operator, now back on angel investing. You're an advisor to Venture Highway. Talk us through what you're currently doing on the invest. Yeah,
sure. Yeah, I think my love is to build things, right? I love getting involved with things which have impact, and you know, I could personally spend my money and time doing those things. So for my investment is my time and money, obviously. And those are the things, two things you invest, right? WhatsApp was obviously a lot of time investment, and that, you know, was really, really helpful in thinking about how to build companies, and learned a lot there. And when we sold the company to Facebook, I obviously got much bigger teams, and I had a little bit of personal capital to help other founders. And I went back to my passion of helping and being part of journeys of startups from India, because when I saw the ecosystem in the Bay Area and I saw the ecosystem in India, I was like, India has a lot of promise. It doesn't have that level of ecosystem that Bay Area has, right? Or China has. So I said, okay, if I'm going to put my energy and my capital to help that, and obviously I can't plug the gap myself, but I'll do everything possible from my side to help. And what that meant is Venture Highway came out of it. So I started that fund with Samir, and I'm just an advisor and LP in that fund because I had my day job with Facebook and WhatsApp. So it became my passion to help and make sure that we have a really world-class team and capital helping new companies out of India. And this was early stage again, because I thought that's the most critical part of a founder's journey when you are starting up and you have ideas and you have a basic product and a prototype. But the kind of help you get, the kind of capital you get is really can really help make or break you and put you on a path, right? So last few years, I've been spending some of my time making sure that vision continues and we have come a long way. I started investing my personal capital, and now we are on Fund 2, which is Venture Highway 2. It's a close to $80 million fund. And we have a bunch of outside LPs in the fund as well. So it's been a pretty satisfying, and for me also a lot of learning, because I'm not an investor. I'm not like, I don't think like an investor. I still think like a company operator builder, I would say. So seeing Venture Highway come up, getting built and become more institutionalized with the proper fund was a new good thing for me as well to learn. But I think I'm very excited about how India has shaped up in the last few years, the kind of talent and energy and speed. And not only that, I think the ambition of the founders is, I have not seen something like that in my last 12, 15 years I've been in the ecosystem in India. So very excited about what is going on there. And you guys are probably one of the best funds who's been helping the companies for a very long time.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. So maybe on the investment side, any specific things you look for now that you've gone this whole journey? What really catches your attention as an investor personally?
I think because we invested at a very early stage, right? My main thing is to look for special founders. That's it. I think you can't really do too much beyond that. That's our learning beam. I mean, when we invested in Moglix or Meesho, there was hardly a product. There was founders and there was a vision and there was ideas, right? So it goes back to backing and finding really special people and founders who are bold and ambitious and they care about solving a problem deeply. And when you see that in their eyes is when you say, okay, I think this is interesting, even though the space or the idea, I mean, people think about TAM and how big this thing is going to become. I think when you are that early, all of those things are difficult to predict, right? And so we spend more time talking to the founders, understanding them deeply and looking at their, you know, resolve and focusing on those parts of the deal. And most of our early stage deals have done really well is when we've seen these gems of the founders who have executed really well. And this share chat, there's like many of these examples where really smart, high energy, focused, you know, entrepreneurs, and they had some clue of what they're going to build, but it was not clear to them till they started doing it and they pivoted a bunch of times to find their what they think can really scale.
Yeah. Great founders find their way, right? So and we've had some of these on the Insights podcast. Rahul from Moglix and Farid from ShareChat. Great guys.
Yeah.
So maybe last question on this section. If you were to build a WhatsApp 2.0 today, would you consider starting up in India? This is a question from when I shared this with a few people that I'm talking to you. This is a question that came up.
I could do it from anywhere. Wherever I can find a team, a starting team. And India has great talent as well. Everywhere, like China, India, Europe, US, obviously Bay Area is great, New York is great, LA is great, right? So I think talent is less of an issue now and capital is less of an issue now. So any great idea could be built anywhere in the world is what I believe. It's completely a personal preference, I would say. Wherever you feel comfortable building a new company, I strongly think you can build it anywhere in the world right now. And the only thing you have to think about is if you're building a global company, you have to think globally. You can't think specific to that geography, right? And from very early days, you can't say, oh, let me do it for this country and then I'll go out, right? Most often it becomes too late by the time you are ready to think about your global strategy and whatnot, right? So I think even though you can delay and you can stagger your rollouts in other parts of the world, but that thinking and that seed of building a global company has to be very early in you, right? Mm. So yeah, absolutely. I could do it from India. I could do it from Bay Area, anywhere. Yeah.
Oh, got it. Maybe ending with a cliched question. The next big thing. What are your top three next big thing ideas?
I don't know. I hate these crystal ball questions, I think, because most often than not, you're wrong, actually. And nobody knows what is going to happen. Nobody knew COVID is going to hit. Nobody knew a lot of other things that have changed in the last few months, right? So the only thing I know is tech is going to be even more important part of your life every day. And that is continuing to happen. And a lot of these structural changes that have happened is going to only increase that move from adopting more technologies, building more products, making your life easier and different and all that, right? So a lot of things that you couldn't imagine a few years back are now happening, right? Like Uber is a classic example of that, right? How Uber and Lyft and, you know, Ola and all of these companies have completely transformed transportation goes to say that it's difficult to predict, right?
Yeah.
But if you have to force me to pick a couple of things, I would say, I think healthcare and education are going to change quite a bit with this new reality that we are going to live in or living in right now. I'm seeing it with my kids. You know, we are always thinking about how do we now make sure they get to do stuff and get exposed to new activities in education remotely and, you know, in a way that is safe for them given the situation that we are in, right? So we'll be forced to rethink a little bit about our education system. I actually don't think the classroom is going to go away, but we'll rethink how can we make the classroom better and remote education better and more accessible and easier and as good or if not better than what we were used to when we were growing up. And then healthcare, obviously, I mean, all of these things are, we are going back to thinking about, okay, what can we do to tackle these things better in the future and all of those things, right? So, you know, this is a great time to be rethinking our healthcare system and education system, I would say.
Great. So few rapid fire, maybe quick 10, 15 second answers on fun questions. Most frequently used app these days?
I think still WhatsApp. I think I'm just too many families and friend groups. And
It's the same story here, man, in India for sure. Most interesting piece of advice, information that you came across during the quarantine?
Most useful advice. Good question. I think face masks are really important, I think, and useful, I would say. I believe in that.
Yeah. Okay, good. What is the best part about working from home for you?
The best part is, I think, seeing my kids grow up more and every few moments. I mean, I'm able to witness that a lot more now that I'm at home and working from home. Yeah,
so true, man, for all of us. Favorite activity for relaxation?
Favorite activity for relaxation, spending time with my kids. And my older kid is starting to do a bunch of things, rollerblading and swimming and all that, right? To be able to do that with him has been very, very relaxing for the mind. It just breaks your, you know, thought and it gives you a break, right? So that's been great. Also, I think going back to rethinking a little bit about and doing some physical changes like yoga, picking up yoga has been really good. And, you know, because pre-COVID, we were so busy and we were always running, you never stepped back and thought about things, right? So it gave me an opportunity to pick up some of these things, which kind of helped me in relaxation or, you know, making sure your mind and your body are fit and relaxed, yeah.
Great. Last one. Any book, podcast, or any stimuli that you would really recommend for our listeners that has bothered you in the recent past?
I would recommend don't read too many news. That's just bad for you. that's not my personal experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we always used to say that at WhatsApp, like most of the media, what media talks about is wrong. Yeah. And there's some motive somewhere and it's like,
yeah.
So we are not big fans of media and press and all that. Having said that, I think it's useful for education and all that. So, you know, I'm a big user of Twitter. I don't tweet too much, but I get most of my news from Twitter. I don't watch TV for news anymore. So yeah, I think knowing what to follow and how do you consume the news and learn new things is important. I think I'll encourage people to think about that, but also limit it. I think what we've seen, you know, a lot of these social media, they become too over consuming and you can fall into that trap of, you know, going down that path of using it too much. So how do you limit, how do you balance it? How do you read the stuff that can be really useful for you and help you striking that balance? Yeah.
Great. On that note, Neeraj, really appreciate you taking the time. This has been super helpful. I'm sure the listeners are going to find this extremely helpful as well. Thank you and wish you the very best luck going forward as well.
Thanks, Anand. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Hope you liked that conversation with Neeraj. We covered a lot of ground there, particularly his time at WhatsApp and some of his learnings there, including working with Ian and Brian there and the Facebook deal. And we also chatted about his time angel investing in India and some lessons from there. If you like this podcast, you can find more from the series at insidespodcast.in, and we'd love to hear from you. Best way is to reach out via Twitter at @Axel_India, and we'd also really appreciate it if you can leave us your reviews and whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on. Thank you.